This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us, making the show a part of your day as we brace and hunker down for the next 24 to 48 hours. Let us be your oasis in this time of warm winds blowing in from the south. Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast with you. Good morning, Seth. This is it's like Groundhog Day. It's like, I feel like we do this every 3 to 6 years. We brace ourselves for a hurricane coming in.
I don't know. I probably shouldn't say this out loud.
Then go ahead.
Now I have to. I've got such trauma over any rain event that when I hear about a wind event, I'm kind of like, eh. Okay.
Yeah.
And yet I should be more scared of the wind. As somebody read, I read somebody in the Chronicle this morning say basically flooding might kill you like in a few days or weeks, whereas the wind can kill you right now.
Right.
So I'm not minimizing it at all. I feel like it's a separate challenge from Harvey, because Harvey was just such a, just a day after day pounding of that rain. Every time you heard the rain on your roof, your heart just kind of froze a little bit. Obviously, I don't mean to minimize it, but it's all bad.
We know there's some stuff coming in, and we are certainly going to keep you apprised of that here throughout the day on Sports Radio 610, and we'll see what the next 24 to 48 hours holds for us sports wise. We know that the Texans are planning a scrimmage tomorrow night. We'll get to that. There's no practice today, so no worries about, is it in the bubble or is it outside? We have plenty of reports from yesterday's practice that we'll get to a little later on this hour. But, Seth, probably the biggest news, the biggest imminent news affecting things on the field or court here in Houston, is that, unfortunately, it looks like Russell Westbrook will be out for one more game. He'll be out for Game 5 this afternoon. 5:30 tip for the Rockets this afternoon. And there will be no Russell Westbrook. So anybody who was maybe critical of the Rockets for, hey, trying to sort of play the middle in this whole thing and hold Russ out for Game 4, maybe you steal Game 4 and you're up 3-1 and maybe you get through this whole series without him. Apparently, he wouldn't have been able to play in Game 4, because if he's not playing in this game, then I'm really concerned.
Right.
This is a game where the series super swings on this game right now. So this concerns me greatly.
Only 7% of teams that have a 2-0 lead in the playoffs end up losing that series.
Right.
So it's a letdown, particularly when it's not like the Rockets got to that 2-0 lead by just getting lucky at the buzzer or anything. They played really good basketball to where you felt like, okay, Oklahoma City just doesn't match up to the Rockets, even without Russell Westbrook. That's what's so disappointing about all this, is that they've flat out blown Games 3 and 4. And the disheartening thing is that they've done it in just the way that any Rockets hater would have predicted. Oh, they're going to settle for easy threes. Oh, James Harden's going to make mental errors and bad passes because he's tired. Like, all those things that frankly feel way too much like the meltdown in San Antonio a few years back for my comfort, Sean.
Yeah. The Harden thing gets perplexing because of no Westbrook in Game 5, and it's not just wanting more firepower on the court. It's the cumulative effect in this series of the defense that the Thunder, and specifically this Dort character, are playing on Harden. I don't know that I've seen a player. I think it's going to frustrate some Rocket fans because I think they feel like the announcers in this series are just all over Dort's jock because of the job that he's doing.
Yeah.
But there's no question about it that I don't know that I've seen a player move their feet better and stay in front of Harden and keep him from getting to the rim than I've seen Dort do in this series. And it's what it's doing is it's forcing Harden into more step-back threes. It's making Harden work just to get to the rim. My big concern is that with no Russ to take some of the heat off of James, that the cumulative effect of this defense that's being played on Harden is going to manifest itself over these next two or three games.
Right, and what does that do also? Aside from Harden's offensive impact, and I don't care what his particular box score is in any particular game, it's that cumulative stress and fatigue from having a guy who's just a gnat, like Dort, to where they're, aside from just making it more difficult on him in ISO, they're having to run more pick and roll, they're having to move more, it starts to fatigue him, and then what happens is the overall focus on defense isn't the same, you know, for the entire team. And that's what you just can't do. We were gushing about how well this defense played in games one and two. You got to play defense for four quarters. So this is a big gut check moment, this game right here, for both, I think, Mike D'Antoni, for James Harden, for all those guys.
For Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
No, seriously, Eric Gordon got – hey, guys, Eric Gordon got a contract extension this offseason, 4 years, nearly $80 million. Let me tell you something right now. That thing doesn't kick in until next season. This is not season one of that four-year extension. This is season zero of that four-year extension. Season one kicks in next year. They gave Eric Gordon that extension because he's supposed to be the guy that takes up the slack for James and Russ when they're either slumping or they're not out there. He's an X factor for this team, and he cannot throw the ball in the ocean. He was better in game four, but he's got it, Seth. He's got to have one of those games tonight where he's like 6 of 11 from 3. You know what I mean? Yeah. If Eric Gordon has one of the – Russ or no Russ, if Eric Gordon has a game where he's knocking down 40 to 50% of his three-pointers, this team's going to win. They're going to win the game. I mean, it's that simple.
Having said all of that, I keep trying to remind myself, hey, they don't have Russell Westbrook out there. Like, we're acting – I feel like I'm emotionally responding to this team and this performance like they're at full strength. And we saw, though, in the first couple games that they are the physically better basketball team. Having said all that and having spent 7 minutes, you know, bemoaning our current state of affairs, once Westbrook comes back, if he can stay healthy, I feel really, really good. Because everything we just talked about, a lot of it goes away just by the presence of Russell Westbrook, by his energy, by his ability to put more stress elsewhere on the defense other than just James Harden. So I do feel as long as they get through this series and Russell Westbrook can come back, I feel just as good as I have for the past couple weeks about their championship chances.
Yeah, for what it's worth, they still sound very optimistic about Russ. Like, when I saw he was out for today's game, I'm like, oh, man, this thing's worse than we think. And then it's quotes from a coach, and it's not a doctor talking about it or showing you an MRI of his leg or anything like that. But they sound like he's really, really close, which leads me to believe that, like any soft tissue injury, Seth, this is the long play here with Russ. They're concerned that if they bring him back for game five, he does something to that quad that all of a sudden makes him unavailable for the Lakers series, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, I think there's got to be there's a lot of handicapping going on here where you say, okay, seriously, we should be able to take care of business versus this team, and maybe it takes a game or two longer than it should have, but get this done so that we can be full strength next. I would imagine Westbrook feels my guess would be Westbrook feels fine right now.
Yeah.
But like you said, like with a hamstring, a quad, anything like this, you want to feel awesome for a week or two before you actually come back because they have a way of re-aggravating themselves.
All right, the Texans are set to have a scrimmage tomorrow night at NRG Stadium. We'll get the update from Bill O'Brien yesterday on what the Texans are doing to, I guess, monitor whether or not that scrimmage is going to happen. Or if it's going to happen on Thursday night or maybe at some point here in the preseason. We'll take a look at the Astros and their interesting day yesterday as well. A unique day over at Minute Maid Park. We'll get to all that. A training camp update at the bottom of the hour. We're loaded. John McClain jumps in at the 7 o'clock hour. Stick with us here. Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610.
But now I'm looking at a European model and I'm looking at this other model. And I'm like, which model do you – I mean, I don't even – like one looks like it's headed towards Louisiana. We're on the west of it. We stay on the west of it. Maybe we'll be okay. But last time I checked, I didn't have a degree in meteorology. So I don't I don't know, but we're definitely watching it. We had a phone call last night. Jack and I had a phone call last night with Jamie Roots, and you know, we're on top of it. You know, we'll make a call when we have to make the call. I think this one's different than Harvey, right? Because it's more about wind, and Harvey was about rain. So I think the wind is an issue relative to our bubble and things like that. So we'll stay on top of it.
You know what? As Bill O'Brien pointed out, the fact that he doesn't have a degree in meteorology, you know, maybe if he had kept our old friend Owen Daniels around instead of, you know, even push him out the door.
Hey, OD is still in town. You know, he's bringing all these other former guys in to be quarterback assistants, and Akeem Dent working with the defensive line, and Cushing is in doing his meathead things in the weight room with everybody else. He can bring in OD as his meteorological consultant.
Owen has been publicly critical of Bill O'Brien, though. I think that's at least now. Yeah. O'Brien lets bygones be bygones.
Does he ever?
Remember when Cushing's buddy claimed that Cushing didn't like O'Brien?
Buddy Pharrell on the bench.
Yeah, Pharrell.
I got Cush. My boy Cush. My boy Cush said he hates O'Brien.
Sounds like he's really your boy if you're selling him out.
Right.
about his actual. So they figured all that out. But I would say is this. There was a moment after practice when John McClain interviewed Bill O'Brien yesterday where he got a couple things wrong about John Reed, and I'm waiting for Landry to pounce on this as somehow an indication.
O'Brien got a couple things wrong about John Reed?
And one of them was about his
rookie
degrees.
Corner from Penn State, yeah.
Yeah, because he was being very complimentary about John Reed. John McClain pointed out to Bill O'Brien that he was 24 years old, and Bill said, I don't know if he was 21 or 24. He's still very smart. He was an engineering major at Penn State. Wow. Data sciences.
This is going to be
our general manager. This is our general manager.
Doesn't even know
the degrees right.
Doesn't even know what major John Reed was. Seth, I was glad that O'Brien clarified shortly after the beginning of that cut that he was talking about meteorology. Just listen to the beginning of it again.
But now I'm looking at a European model, and I'm looking at this other model. And it, you know, I'm like, which model do you? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, he's salivating over models on the internet.
I mean, O'Brien's the general manager, the head coach, he's got all these duties, and the dude's sitting in his office looking at the internet, man.
He's sitting up here, he's talking about Melania Trump. He's bringing politics into it.
I don't get
European
it, man.
Model.
I just bought one of those multiple screen things that you got in your office, so I got the European models on one of them. What's I got another model over here.
What is the other hurricane model? There's the European model, and then there's what?
I don't know. I just know that they have the spaghetti tracking thing. That's what I follow because it makes me hungry. Yeah.
It does. It looks like a good time.
It does.
Like, woo!
Yeah.
What a wacky. It almost looks, the spaghetti model looks like it's inviting you in for great deals on tires. It's like one of those wavy, inflatable things.
Yeah, the inflatable things. That's so true.
All right, so in all seriousness, Laura, looks like it's probably going to hit east of here. It looks like Lake Charles is just going to get pummeled at this point.
Yeah, which I hate for the people of Lake Charles because it's one of my favorite vacation spots is the Golden Nugget over in Lake Charles. So
batten the hatches, and honestly, my biggest advice would be get the hell out. Yeah. Just get out. If you're in an evacuation zone, don't be a hero. Just get out. Your material things aren't nearly as valuable as your actual life. I love all of you.
And it should be blown through here by Thursday afternoon. You can come back and then check things out. So yeah. The point with all this is not that Bill O'Brien is looking at European models. It's that there is a scrimmage set to be on Thursday night at NRG Stadium in the stadium. Seth, where they're set to do like a full game day operation. You know, they don't have any preseason games, so. From what O'Brien says, they're treating this thing like a game day. Like the players are going to show up at the stadium 3-4 hours ahead of time. They're going to suit up. They're going to stretch out. They're going to do all the things that we see them doing when you go to the stadium an hour and a half early and they're out there doing stretching exercises. They're going to do that, so they do that at least one time before they head to Kansas City in a couple of weeks.
Right, which, as you'll recall, I had suggested that he do. And not that he took my suggestion. I'm guessing he planned this out. Whenever they figured out that there weren't going to be any preseason games, I think most head coaches thought first, like, okay, we need to have a dress rehearsal. And this might sound stupid and weird, but things as simple as just being sure pregame warm-ups go smoothly, all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of logistics to it. It's a whole different flow. You got to explain to the rookies exactly where they're going to be. So all of that and being sure that goes off without a hitch. And also, as you're also working in all these coronavirus restrictions, yeah, it's kind of a big deal just to get that. And then there's also just the psychological part of getting yourself up and ready for a game.
What'd you think of the, just shifting gears real quick here on a Wednesday morning on Payne and Pendergast, did you like or did you dislike or did you have no feeling one way or the other on the 2 7-inning game doubleheader with the Astros yesterday?
I liked the first one. I kind of started in the first inning. I was thinking, my goodness, thank God this one's only 7 innings.
I know.
I thought the score was going to end up being 37-1, but it didn't be. It wasn't quite that convincing of a victory, but it was a very nice first inning. It didn't bother me, you know, like, I guess if either game had come down to a closer margin, then maybe I would have longed for more. Yeah. I think that at this point, both teams, look, the Angels are suffering with their pitching depth right this moment more than the Astros are, but both teams aren't in awesome shape health-wise, so I was cool to get the hell out of there with 14 innings played.
The second game of the doubleheader was the first time that I've really felt this during the season this year, and that is the feeling of, like, you know what? This season is just jacked up, man. Like, this is just a weird freaking season. I mean, I'm emotionally invested in the Astros, and I want them to do well mostly to piss off the rest of the baseball world, because if they make a playoff run, if they got to a World Series again, who knows? Whatever. That would make everybody eternally angry. But the second game where they're out there and they're throwing a guy out there that they just got off the street at one point, you know, there's guys that just played a game a half hour ago that are starting here again. I forget who it was that pitched in both games. Was it Blake Taylor that pitched in both the first game and this? Like, there's so
Blake
much.
Blake only had, like, yeah, because he just came at the end of the one inning.
Yeah,
the first,
I mean, just so much weird crap going on. Not to mention the fact that the two games are 7 innings long. I'm like, you know what? Just a weird year. I can't get angry at this team. Whatever happens, happens. YOLO, man. Let's just go do this, and we'll see. Seth, I don't know if you know this. They are more than halfway through the season right now.
I know.
They're 31 games in.
At the same time, that feels weird. But, Sean, it's late August. Of course they're halfway through the season.
Well over
halfway. But not quite as halfway through the season. They're not as far through the season in terms of percentage as they would be normally at the end of August. My biggest thing right now is the battle between Cody Bellinger and Jose Altuve. I think Bellinger is currently –
Is he above the Mendoza line?
He's at 225. He's at 225 now.
First one to 250 wins.
Altuve is at like 210 or something. Yeah. So I think he's currently. Oh, no, no, no. Bellinger's at 211 right now.
I think Altuve's at 211 also. So it's quite the race between these two. I know.
This is a battle. Look, batting average doesn't matter like it used to. But for the sake of these two this year, I want to just come on, Altuve, pull it out. If it's 237, I don't care, as long as Bellinger's at 236.
The battle between the tortoise and the other tortoise is who it is. Yeah. So, all right. So, Texans, practice number 9 yesterday. They were in shells, no pads, but it was a full speed practice and some interesting performances from some players that I think a lot of people have questions about. We will tell you at least two of those that had good days yesterday next. Stay safe out there, everybody. It is a Wednesday here on Payne and Pendergast, and we are all bracing to see what Mother Nature brings us over the next 24 hours. I disappointed Ocho, who texted in, "Damn, Sean, that was almost a perfect live read for Wingstop until you stumbled at the end. I was about to rave about it on the text, but you didn't complete the process. So disappointing." I laughed about that after the live read. I said to our producer, Ben Gary, I said, I almost stumbled and said where wings get their flavor. It's where Wingstop, where flavor gets its wings. That's how you become proficient, Seth. That's how you know you're proficient in a live read, where you just don't have the copy in front of you and you're speaking from the heart. And I can speak from the heart on Wingstop. I've eaten a lot of it in my day. But for some reason, some mornings, your brain reverses things. You know what I mean? And I almost said Wingstop, where wings get their flavor. It's Wingstop, where flavor gets its wings.
Oh, yeah.
And I stumbled a little bit. I coming out of my break, I stumbled, and the cornerback was able to push me to the ground. But I recovered, and I got it right.
It's a good breakdown.
Yeah. Thank you.
We also we spent the break kind of figuring out, okay, what's Altuve have to do to get to 300?
Yeah, in more important matters. Yes.
And then we realized, like, oh, wait a second, that's actually pretty easy. They're halfway through, so he's at 206 right now. He has to hit about 394 for the most part.
That's
the rest
right.
of this 394. Excuse me.
Yeah.
He has to be about 394 for the rest of the season to end up with 300.
Yeah.
So I don't even need him to hit 300 necessarily. I just need him to hit something to where I can just very easily point out and say, hey, look, yeah, he's just as good as he ever was. Okay,
Seth,
so just shut the hell up.
I don't even need him to finish at 250. What I need is for him to be hitting 480 in the last week of the season going into the postseason.
Yeah.
That's what we need. We just need that. That's what we need with all these guys. It was very clarifying yesterday when I saw an article that I think it was on MLB.com. Someone did a mid-season All-Star team for Major League Baseball. You know, and mid-season, 30 games into the 60 game season, and I was kind of, as I'm clicking it, I'm going, man, I wonder if any of the Astros made this thing. And they're 17 and 14. They're one of the top 12 or 13 teams in baseball right now. They're not nearly where they've been before, but they're going to make the playoffs, and we'll see what happens. And you know, they're not healthy right now. They've had a lot of really bad injuries. But I'm thinking to myself, man, who on the Astros would make a midseason All-Star team for Major League Baseball, where in most seasons you'd have four or five guys that would be in a discussion at least, and then probably two or three that would actually make it, including Altuve. And that's where the only one that made it was Greinke, who is having a phenomenal season. Even though he's only had one decision so far this year, he's 1-0, but his ERA is in the low twos. He made it. He was the only Astro that made it. He's their MVP so far this year. But it got me thinking, like, you know what? As long as these guys are as healthy as they can be and they're moving the right way trajectory-wise heading into the postseason, that's all I'm asking for. I don't need an MVP-level season in the end out of Bregman or Springer or Altuve. Just be what we know you can be by September 27th. That's the deadline,
yeah.
You know? If you have to procrastinate to do it and you wait till September 20th to be that person, then so be it.
That's all we ask for here.
That's all we ask.
This very, very weird year we have
that's
where
right.
There's so little news coming out of football that it's kind of freaking me out. I think that
you're right.
There's much less access by the media, which I got to imagine most coaches are just in love with that because it means fewer reports, fewer rumors to shoot down, all of that. Although I do wonder, I think sometimes coaches also like a certain amount of rumor mongering because then they can maybe build somebody up. You remember Ryan Mallett? Remember when the Patriots thought they were going to get like a second rounder for Ryan Mallett because he was the next? Oh my gosh, he's incredible. Nobody's got an arm like him. There's very little of that going on because you just don't get a chance to see any of these guys.
That's a good place to start with yesterday's practice report, Seth, actually, is with the head coach, Bill O'Brien. Let's get that mood music going there, Ben. Let's get us in the mood for a little practice. I was at practice number 9 yesterday. I'm a little sad. That'll be the last practice, full practice that I'll be at for the Texans or any media member will be at from now on. After the scrimmage on Thursday, it's all going to be regular season type stuff where you get to show up for the stretching and that's pretty much it. So I know. So we got to watch a full practice. They were in shells just to set the scene. It was hot out there. They were in shells. Unlike the last practice in shells where it was mostly kind of mental work, walkthrough stuff, Seth, they were going full speed yesterday, you know, just not hitting. And so there were some things that were reasonable facsimile type of stuff where you could draw some conclusions. My first thing before we get into the actual players is this was a day where you truly did see what Bill O'Brien has been talking about in terms of what delegating play calling duties allows him to do as a head coach. He actually, for the first 30 to 45 minutes of practice, spent almost no time with the offense. He spent the first part of the practice with special teams, with kickoff and punt teams, standing down next to the goal line, next to the returners. Bill O'Brien was playful yesterday. And here are just a couple examples real quick. He was doing a thing with Brian Anger where Brian Anger was punting, and he wanted Anger to punt it and see if he could land it as close to the goal line as possible, almost like a golfer trying to get closest to the pin. Mm-hmm. And O'Brien is standing there watching Anger do this, and he's like a little kid watching the ball roll towards a goal line. And as Anger got one literally within like 6 inches of the goal line to stop. And O'Brien's going nuts, and he's looking around, and he points to Pendergast. Are you looking at this? Are you looking at this? Man, he's like, these punters, you know, they don't do anything until like the fourth, you know, until like the fifth practice. They're just drinking wine the whole offseason, like my friends at Brown. Are you seeing this right here? So that was really cool. And then when the offense and defense were going through their walkthroughs, their separate walkthroughs, where, you know, you get the offense going against a defensive line made up of other offensive linemen and vice versa on the defense, O'Brien gets in and lines up with the opposing defensive line and the opposing offensive line in the walkthroughs, like in a 3-point stance and everything. Like he's in a 3-point stance in the faux defensive line, trying to make Titus Howard jump off sides. Like
well, I think you know what we have here, Sean.
What's that?
We have a new Bill O'Brien.
That's it.
We have.
I'm just laying it all out there. I'm gonna let you.
It's Nouveau Bill. It was maybe this year. Maybe by delegating more. Maybe you see we've seen the fun and playful side of him before. Maybe this ends up being the thing that sometimes. I played for Tom Coughlin when he was at his most anal. And you could see it in the playoffs. You could see us play tight. Yeah. When I was on some very good Jaguars teams, and in the playoffs, at critical moments, guys made big mistakes. And I think a lot of it was that was when Coughlin had the reins held so tightly that guys were stressed out all the time. Guys got injured because of it. He loosened up when he was in New York, and you saw what happened. He won 2 Super Bowls. Through largely those teams in New York that won the Super Bowls, I don't think we're as good as our good teams in Jacksonville, but they could do it in crunch time.
Yeah.
They just flat out, they were playoff performers, and I think a lot of it is the personality of the head coach. Now, I'm not going to make the same mistake I did last year where I, you know, say, like,
he's
oh,
got to prove it to us.
Yeah.
He's got
to. But I do think that also him, you know, remember, he was a linebacker in college, right?
Right, he was.
So I wonder, but then he became an offensive coach, and he spent decades on the offensive side of the ball. I bet it is kind of refreshing and maybe reinvigorating for him to be able to get back on the side of the ball he played and see it from that perspective and be with those guys more.
Yeah, I tell those stories just because I think they're funny stories that fans or listeners don't get to see because they're not allowed to go to practice this year. So I'm sharing those just to try to bring people inside. But I think the bigger point, to go back to your original point, Seth, just about O'Brien, is that he has spent very little time, at least optically. You know, we don't know what the conversations are like when he's talking to the offense. If he's, you know, maybe he is doing things he used to do in terms of saying, no, it's my way on this play here or there. But just in terms of where he's spending his time, he is spending his time in a manner in which it appears he is delegating more to Tim Kelly than he's ever delegated to any offensive coach since he got here.
And the players really seem to like Tim Kelly. And,
yes.
You know, it's easy. Hey. No, or very few players at least, especially during training camp, are going to come out and say anything negative at all about their position coaches or their coordinators, obviously. But I feel like guys go above and beyond in praising Tim Kelly and talking about just how good his memory is and all these things. So ultimately it comes down to designing a game plan and play calling. But for whatever it's worth, these guys, for right now, are really responding to him.
Yeah, they are. And Deshaun likes him, which is the most important thing, I suppose. All right.
Keep now, Deshaun happy. His agent just got Buda Baker, one of the richest contracts in history.
Buda Baker.
There's David Mugalette is going to. You guys are, if you're angry about your season ticket prices in a couple of years, blame Deshaun's super agent.
He got Buda Baker, the highest paid safety contract in football, and Buda Baker has as many interceptions as Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne in his career. Buda Baker has no career interceptions as a safety. Yeah, that's wild.
You know, and it's as a cornerback, sometimes you can say, well, yeah, that's because, you know, he's just playing man coverage or what have you. Or they don't throw to him. They don't throw at him. So, of course, he doesn't have many interceptions.
Safety
is a little bit more opportunistic.
Yeah, I would think so. All right.
Buda Baker, David Mugalette. That's a whole lot of different syllables all real quick.
Yeah. So, So players that performed yesterday, Seth, I said this either earlier this week or late last week. It was when I did one of my appearances, probably on In the Loop, because I know they like to have a lot of fun at Cahali Waring's expense because he hasn't really done much yet as a player in the NFL. I said, I'm with you guys. People need to stop asking me about Cahali Waring. Like, until he does something, don't ask me about him. People like to point him out as this future X factor because he got drafted based on his athletic ability and what his potential is. But he was on injured reserve last year. He had spent the first 4 or 5 practices of this preseason largely in shorts and T-shirt. So at that point, I said, don't ask me about him anymore. Well, yesterday I proactively brought him up when I went on In the Loop. And you can imagine how that went with Landry Locker. But it was because Cahali Waring had 2 touchdown catches yesterday in 11-on-11 that Seth, were not catches where they schemed him open and he's the only guy standing there in the end zone and he catches the ball like I could in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
He had a touchdown from Deshaun Watson that was a high point, back of the corner, end zone. He had a shorter defensive back on him. He had Vernon Hargraves on him. And it was very back corner. Waring went up, high pointed the ball, came down with it, both feet, back corner of the end zone, and then he closed practice by catching a touchdown on a deep route where he got behind Jonathan Owens, the safety, and caught the ball, scored a touchdown there. It was a good day for Kahale Waring. Kahale Waring had a couple of plays where we were finally able to go, okay, now I can see why Brian Gangane used a third-round pick on him last year.
Yeah, and we saw that during the rookie minicamps and the minicamps before training camp started last year.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why isn't the Loop get so angry with him? I mean, he was injured last year. He was on injured reserve. I don't quite get why being on injured reserve is all of a sudden also an indication of your talent level.
One, I think sometimes In the Loop likes to get irrationally angry about strange things. Number two, they had a caller call their show last year after Waring got drafted, and the caller felt like they were making fun of water polo. And yeah. We know Waring's background is in water polo, and the guy was belligerent with them about water polo and not knowing how hard water polo is, and they got mad that they were calling him the water polo tight end in sort of a derisive kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe it could be something personal with that caller as well. You know what I mean?
Water polo is a pretty tough sport.
Really
a lot
tough.
Of stuff that goes on below the depths. It's probably been cleaned up ever since they have these high-definition underwater
cameras. No, you're right. You watch a water polo player get out of the pool, they got scratches all over their body. I remember the first time I found out that water polo, where they were actually treading water the whole time, they weren't just walking around in the pool. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You're treading water the whole time?
For a long time. A really long time.
Yikes.
But I also do think it's one of those sports that's dominated by a certain demographic, to where I feel like, oh, getting a scholarship in college is a little bit, you're not necessarily pulling from the same pool as sports where all of America plays it.
Resources might be better allocated somewhere else. I see.
It always feels like, hey, how can we figure out a way to get a bunch of these guys some college scholarships?
Right.
Yeah. The problem is they're not even kids that need scholarships. They're rich kids, typically. And I say that. I mean, they're upper middle class.
Yeah. Next player that had a good practice yesterday, and this is important because this is one of the ongoing position battles at practice for the 53-man roster. DeAndre Carter continues to make separation between him and Kiki Coutee in the battle to return kicks for this team and be the backup slot receiver. Kiki Coutee out again. Aaron Wilson reporting yesterday it's a stress fracture in his foot that's been keeping him out. They don't think it's serious, but it's kept him out for the last several practices, including yesterday. And DeAndre Carter isn't just out there trying to get this job through default. He's having good practices. He's taking advantage of the reps. He had a touchdown yesterday against John Reed down near the goal line on a short little 5-yard pass where Carter caught the ball going towards the sideline, dove for the pylon, and scored a touchdown. He had a couple long catch and runs on that same drive in 11-on-11. Carter's having a good camp. QT's not out on the field. It'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out if QT is able to get on the field for this scrimmage, because right now Carter is cementing his role that he had last year, Seth, as the kick returner for this team.
And I would say the scuttlebutt about Kiki QT is that he's whatever it was that perhaps Bill O'Brien had against him last year in terms of either maybe his youthfulness or his inexperience or his ability to pick up the offense. That seems to have changed. I mean, there are very positive reports about Kiki QT and how well he's grasping the offense. So
O'Brien himself said when Kiki was sitting out practices and he was asked about it, he said, you know, it's Kiki's had a good camp so far. And Kiki was having a good camp so far.
Yeah. I don't think – I think they like him long term. I think his – boy, I swear, I just – when Kiki QT is doing the jet sweep action – it scares me. Like, I'm like, oh, something big, not scares. I'm like, oh, something big's about to happen.
Right.
Which is the effect you want to have on the defense. Whether you're giving him the ball or not, you want the defense to have to adjust or perhaps overreact to it, and that creates opportunities. And I don't think there's another guy, there's not another young guy on the roster that does that the way Kiki QT does.
Nope.
So I think he makes the team.
Will Fuller got on the field for 11-on-11 yesterday, Seth. Not much, but he got on the field, and he actually scored a touchdown, also against John Reed. It was kind of an unfair deal. It was, you know, it was about a 10-yard... You know, one of these, it was in the red zone, one of these deals where John Reed is probably looking across going, holy crap, this is the fastest guy in the NFL. And it wasn't on a part of the field where Will Fuller could hit a go route. It was in the red zone. But Will Fuller is one of those guys that, you know, forget about the go routes. He's pretty good at getting himself open. He got himself open pretty easily down near the goal line against Reed and scored a touchdown. Good to see Will Fuller out on the field in 11-on-11.
Yeah. Also, as I've noticed from some of the reports the last couple of days, as the starting wide receivers get out there, I don't think people are gushing quite as much about the pass coverage as right. perhaps they were. Like, I'm like, okay, yeah, great. They're beating up on second stringers. Good for you.
I'm glad you said that, because my reports back to the other shows after practice, the first few days of padded practice, was, boy, the defense won again today. Boy, good yeah. day for the D. Now, granted, the defense is not playing with J.J. Watt out there, but you're right. Deshaun Watson has largely been out there through training camp with Stevie Mitchell, Chad Hansen, and for a while, Kiki Coutee is his trio of wide receivers.
Yeah, really, what you were saying was, wow, this defense is a lot better than it was last training camp when they had to cover DeAndre Hopkins.
That's right.
We're doing all right here. Yeah.
Eric Murray, who I think is another question mark for a lot of folks. We just don't know what Eric Murray is as a starting safety for 16 games in this league. He had an interception yesterday. It was on a Bradley Roby tip ball. I forget who Roby was covering. It was off of Deshaun Watson. So Deshaun's had a couple of interceptions now on some not great throws. Like, you know, there's certain interceptions. They bounce off a receiver's hand. Guy picks it off. This was a tip drill interception, but it was not a good throw by Watson. Watson's had a great camp. He's had a couple bad throws the last couple days, throwing into coverage that Bradley Roby has been a part of. Roby with an interception 2 days ago. Roby with the tip drill yesterday. Murray picks it off and takes it the other way for a decent chunk of yardage. So I guess my takeaway with all that is more about Roby than it is Murray. Murray was just opportunistic. Roby's had a really good couple days of practice.
That's good.
again, it was, to your point, not against Brandon Cooks or Will Fuller. It was with Stevie Mitchell, who, you know, God bless him, is doing everything with what God gave him. But at least, look, better than Roby getting beat by these guys, I suppose.
This is where Bradley Roby is another guy that could potentially at least make the Tyrann Mathieu deal look better than it potentially was, I think. Because Tyrann Mathieu came, played 1 year with the Texans, and then went off and got a much better deal than he'd right. been offered the previous season.
Yep.
I think that Bradley Roby came to Houston kind of thinking that same thing. I think it was I think that a lot of guys are starting to look at Houston that way, as like, hey, they'll give you an opportunity to play and make something of yourself. So I feel good about Bradley Roby this year. I think he's matured a lot. Whatever it was that was keeping him from being consistent in Denver, whatever led to him going MIA for a day or two in Denver, we haven't seen or heard anything like that. I think he's just, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be a much better player.
He's the grizzled vet in that defensive back room now, all of a sudden. You know, where he spent his career as a younger player with a lot of potential, who has had moments, you know, more so in Denver than here, but moments where maturity's been an issue. Now he's been thrust into a role where he's forced to be a mature football player. All right, so there's your report. There's your report from practice number 9. Practice number 10 will be a scrimmage in NRG Stadium on Thursday night, Hurricane Laura willing. All right, we have a bunch of stuff that we still need to get into, a lot of leftover stuff from the Texans and also around the league. Seth alluded to the Buda Baker deal. Where's Earl Thomas going to go? These are all things that we're going to discuss with the general, John McClain, who jumps in an hour earlier than normal because we have Texans training camp live at 8 o'clock today here on Sports Radio 610. John will be back to his normal schedule next week. 7 o'clock hour with John McClain, the general, starts next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.